Well, Daniele, as this game has finally been brought to its merciful conclusion, I will confess something to you. I tend to write a lot of notes while during the game on days I'm doing Jay's talk. I don't have a ton written down here from today's ballgame. It's just an admission on my end. Like, here are the positives from this game, all right? You tell me if I'm missing anything. I think I can squeeze them in like 15 seconds. Ernie Clement notching 3 hits. Will Robertson getting his first MLB hit in RBI. And Alan Roden face planting into the wall to complete one of the more crazy catches you'll ever see. Like, I think that's about it for me. I don't know if I missed anything.
No, I don't think you missed anything, Sho. I was going to say, from my standpoint, I would argue the one that stood out was obviously the Alan Roden play. Beyond that, the exception of that, and this is no slight against Ernie Clement whatsoever, because he's been very good. He's doing a lot of great things at the plate, in the field. He's playing literally every position. That would, for me, Sho, qualify as the only positive and highlight from this ballgame. It's unfortunate. It's sad. But I don't know. I mean, you could correct me if I'm wrong on this, but didn't it feel like almost, oh man, within the first 3 innings, we were sitting here, we're like, yeah, it's 2-0, whatever. Kind of felt like we were reserved to almost the reality of it being a sweep. It set in early, very early on, where it felt like, okay, the bat's not operating at optimal performance here today. It's been a rough weekend. Barrios didn't have his A-plus stuff today. You're going up against Zach Wheeler, who had his fastball working. It just never got going for this Jays team today. And again, almost an illustration of what the entire weekend was here in Philadelphia for this team.
That is Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk. We're live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well. See a bunch here already. 590, 590, name and location. The people's text line always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. Yeah, it was a tough weekend, no doubt about it. I mean, the team had all the momentum in the world as they went into Philly. They had won 12 of 14 after they swept the Cardinals in St. Louis. And today, an 11-4 loss wraps up the series loss. A sweep at the hands of the Phillies. They are now 38-33 on the season. They still go 5-4 on what will be the longest road trip of the whole season. There is no longer road trip, barring, I guess, rescheduled games, for example, and rainouts and so on. But at least right in this second, there is no longer road trip that they will play for the rest of the year. But it is still a really tough way for the road trip to end in Philly. Like, I do ultimately think a 5-4 record on what was always going to be a tough road trip through Minnesota, St. Louis, and Philly is something you absolutely take. It is just tough the way it ends with, you know, you enter Philly, you have a 5-1 record entering the last leg of the road trip. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't think my view of this team has changed that much. I mean, and I don't want to make this sound like I'm making excuses for them. They played poorly in this entire series, but running into Ranger Suarez and then Zach Wheeler and then losing to Christopher Sanchez, like that one maybe game with the sinkers and changeups, like, I'm not sure invalidates everything that took place over the last like month, right? I'm not saying you overlook the poor play, whether it's the pitchers. Barrios, like you said, was not particularly great today. Gausman had the blip, and ultimately the team couldn't bounce back from that on Friday. Baden Francis, we talked a lot about yesterday. The offense did not score a lot of runs in this entire series. What, it was 6 runs over 3 games, essentially. Yep. Look, those are not good things. You can't really take a lot of positives from that, but I'm not ready to like bury this team after they run into the Phillies on the road with those 3 guys.
No. I think if this was any other team, Sho, and we weren't in a position as people that watch on a daily basis and observe and follow this team, you'd look at the schedule. You'd say it's the end of a 9-game road trip. If you were going to look at any series where good opponent, tough pitching matchups, right, that you were going to pay attention and say, circle it on the calendar, that's going to be a rough one, this would have been it. Like, this is kind of that scheduled, I don't want to say scheduled loss, but the schedule wasn't favorable to you. You look at it, you say, that's the series that's going to be challenging here. Even with all the momentum, even with an off day on Thursday, going into this series and looking at who they were going to be competing against on the opposite side, felt like it might have been challenging. And yes, there's no Bryce Harper. There's no reason to make excuses, of course. I tend to agree with you, though, Sho. I feel like the sample size has been large enough recently to where you hope this is more of a blip than the beginning of something that is negative for this team.
Right, right.
That's it. You just hope it is in something that it is reflective of the body of work as a whole, and you put more stock into what that sample size was. But the only thing I think maybe we can take away of substance from the offensive side of things, this team is worse on the road than they are at home when it comes to run production in general. Whether it's getting on base, hitting homers, timely hitting, they aren't as effective when they are outside the confines of Rogers Center. And that is a little bit of a contrast to what has been a theme in the last couple of years, where they've actually been better on the road than at home. Now that script has been flipped altogether. I don't know if that's a trend. I don't know if that's something that we should be concerned about, but I do think it warrants paying more attention to and giving it the oxygen that is necessary. I think your stars need to help drive you when you're on the road, and that's something that's common in a lot of sports. That is something I would also like to see more of is, hey, Vladdy, Bo Bichette, these are the games where if you're going to lift your team up, back-to-back losses, try to salvage a series, those are the guys you want to see leading the charge offensively.
And you know, there was a point in this game where the Jays clawed their way back into it after some timely hitting, some pretty good base running, I would say. I mean, you're trying to squeeze Wheeler for as many runs as you possibly can, which, you know, often is not many. And I turned to you here at Baseball Control, and I said to you, like, they can win this game. Yeah. This is a winnable game. They're only down by 2 runs. It was 4-2 Phillies at that point. And I turned to you and I said, you know, if Berríos can hold it down here, they can win this game and salvage the series. Then immediately he went out and gave up some more runs. It was a poor start from Berríos, right? I mean, you said it off the top, didn't really have his A-plus stuff, maybe not even his A stuff, right? I mean, it's a letdown because with Berríos, he has usually been someone who almost every single timeout gives you at least a chance to win, right?
Yeah.
Like he's giving, even if he gives up early runs, he usually locks it down. It ends up being something pretty consistently around 6 innings, 5 2/3, 6 innings, 6 1/3, something like that. From Berríos, most of his starts, and it's not what you got today, 4 2/3, 6 earned runs. That's a tough way for the road trip to end. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones, though. Let's kick things off with Russ in Philly. Russ, what's up?
How are you today?
Good, man. How are you?
Very well. So I want to take a little bit of a different approach, and I don't have rose-colored glasses. I've been critical of this team, but if you look back at it, they played 12 games against above 500 teams. They went 7-5, okay? They have 3 against Arizona, who I think will also be a 500 team. But the point is, at this point, you lost the 3. That's going to happen. You didn't like the way they looked 100%. But you're going up against Arizona, who can't – I know they can hit very well. They can't pitch to save their life. And you're going up against a White Sox team who can't pitch or hit, you got to go 4-2 or four, at least, probably, you know, I think they should go 5-1. You're at home, you should go 5-1. Now, to the point about, yes, they have had trouble on the road, but lately they went into St. Louis, they scored. Now, St. Louis is not the greatest pitching team, but they scored 20 runs in the 3 games they were there. Mm-hmm. They scored, what was it? I'm just making my head. I think they scored 14 against the Twins. So they scored almost 5 runs a game. They're winning 2 out of 3. You go back, they went out west coast to Seattle, a place they always have horrors. They scored 21 runs, if I'm not mistaken. So the team is going to have its ups and downs. They're not a great, great team. But I think this team should come home. And, you know, like I said, the 3 games were tough. But if you want to, you know, make a statement the other way, go beat Arizona at least 2 out of 3 and sweep the White Sox. They're terrible. You got to beat these teams. And, you know, hopefully, like I said, the Yankees lost again today. So the division, you know, it's amazing, but it's still up there. And you think how good the Yankees are in first place without Cole. It's unbelievable. But, you know, this team has baseball left, and it should be an interesting summer. That's my point for today.
Hey, Russ, appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us here on Jays Talk. Yeah, here are the probables for the Diamondbacks series, in case you're curious, right? Brandon Pfaadt, I believe is how you pronounce it. Yeah. He will take on Bassett on Tuesday. We have TBA on the Blue Jays side for Wednesday. You got to assume that's the bullpen day. they're probably just figuring out who will start, although after Turnbull threw like 50-plus pitches today, I'm going to guess it's Eric Lauer. Eduardo Rodriguez will start for the Diamondbacks, and on Thursday, Gausman will go. Ryan Nelson will start. So, no Zach Allen, no Merrill Kelly in this, unless things change, of course, which is certainly possible, but that's how things line up right now. I kind of agree with Russ. I mean, you got it. Like, again, you're at home. You mentioned the home cooking. They've been a lot better at home than they have been on the road. And to Russ's point, they have been like good-ish on the road in spurts, certainly. So, yeah, I think that is, and again, you certainly can never in this sport, in any sport, count and say, like, that's a win, that's a loss, that's a win. You never really know, right? But ultimately, I do think you have Bassett and Gausman in two of those three starts, and Lauer, who has been very consistent. I mean, you need the offense to show up against Fott, Rodriguez, and Nelson.
Absolutely. I think good context by Russ, too, because he's right. I think in hindsight, and I mentioned that statistically, yeah, there is a disparity between offensive production at home versus what you've seen on the road. Now, that being said, you are going to get the odd series like this. It happens. It's natural. It happens. The Yankees just got swept by the Red Sox. Are they going to be freaking out? I mean, probably, because it's New York show. But mind you, it happens, right? This stuff does occur over the course of 162 games. I think, you know, on the road, they're 16-20. They are 18-24 this season against teams that are above 500. They've actually played more teams that are above 500 than they have the inverse, those that are under 500.
Right.
And that's a product of their schedule. They have a pretty challenging schedule, at least up until this point. It's been challenging. Russ is right, though. You go home, you're going to play an Arizona team this week that is going to be either one game over or three games over, depending on the result of whatever happens today against the Padres in their series finale. Then you're going to see the brutal Chicago White Sox that are bad, objectively bad. That has the makings of, hey, give us that 4-2 little 6-game homestand and feel good about turning things back around again and getting a positive couple of wins in the column, in the ledger, and put yourself in a good position. I think what's comforting, if you're a Jays fan in general right now, it being June the 15th, is that when you look at the division and you look at the American League at large, boy, does it feel like you could see a pathway developing. And that is encouraging. Not to be dismissive of any issues, right, that do exist with this team, whether it be offensively or in the pitching department, but it is refreshing. It is somewhat encouraging to see a pathway that can develop for this team to go and have a nice summer and be competitive and be relevant and challenge for a postseason spot.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Etobicoke, where Max is joining us from Etobicoke. Max, welcome to Jays Talk. What's on your mind?
Hi, I was wondering, should the Jays sell or buy at the trade deadline coming up?
Ooh, that's a good question. Before we get to what we think, Max, what do you think?
Well, I don't know. It depends on how they keep playing. Like, the series they just had, I think they should sell. But depending on how the next 10 to 15 games go, I think we'll decide whether they should sell or buy at the deadline.
Max, appreciate the call. That's like the perfect take, because honestly, like, that sounds like something I would say on a Sportsnet Today or something like that.
It depends.
It depends. Wait the next 10 to 15 games. Because, I mean, Max's not wrong, right? I mean, you could have a really dismal 15 games, and that 15 games from now would, like, generally speaking, take you at the very least closer to certainly not the deadline, but certainly at least the All-Star break, right? I mean, it's June 15th today. That would get us to like the end of the month at the very least. So, and you have a really poor showing in 15 games. I think our tune would be a lot different than if they go out there and, like Russ was saying earlier, go 5-1 versus the Diamondbacks and White Sox, and you're thinking about it a little differently. I do think, well, though, as long as you're hovering around that third wildcard spot, and I said this a million times, but I'll say it again just as a reminder, and I understand that, like, your goal as a team should not be to just squeak into the third wildcard spot. It should be to, like, win your division and make big, like, have grand results,
yeah,
let's say, in your division and move on past the wildcard and so on and so forth. Like, we all understand that, right? But I think the mere existence of the third wildcard essentially means that we won't really know the answer to that question until we're so much closer to the deadline. And a lot can change between now, it's June 15th, and the end of not this month, but next month, essentially, right? I tend to believe that what I've seen from the team, and again, I know they just got swept by the Phillies, I tend to believe that what I've seen, Daniele, is like sustainable to a certain point where in a division that is not particularly strong, in an American League that is pretty jumbled up, that it's probably better to be buyers, if maybe not really hard buyers, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know if you really want to sell Yesavage or Namala for anything at this point, unless it's like Paul Skeens, for example, right? That's probably not happening. But I don't know. Like, are you really going to trade any of your top prospects? Like, the Diamondbacks coming to town, you know who's been a really popular trade target is Merrill Kelly, mm-hmm. if things don't turn around for the Diamondbacks. Are you really going to part with a top prospect for a guy who is, A, probably a rental and has said he wants to finish his career in Arizona? Like, probably not, right? So I think those are the kinds of names we're going to be talking about, I think, between now and you know, the end of July.
Yeah, it depends on the caliber of player we're talking about, show, in that respect, but... You know, here's a good example. Funny enough, the White Sox are coming to town at the end of this week, coming up, obviously, next weekend, that is. And they just traded for Aaron Civale, who they pick up from the Brew Crew.
Right.
And
he asked to be traded. Yeah.
They move out, Andrew Vaughn was the piece. And now Andrew Vaughn, I think he, you know, had that one isolated season where he hit 20 homers. I think it was his first or second year in the big leagues. It hasn't done much since.
He got traded and it was immediately sent down to the minors.
He's struggled, admittedly, right? And they struggled to find a spot and really try to, extract more based on the potential that he flashed early on in his big league career. I say all that, though, to say, are you comfortable with making a trade of that ilk if you're the Blue Jays?
Right.
Something of that equivalent. I don't know what the equivalent, I was trying to think of this yesterday, in fact, but I couldn't come up with a name that would be sort of the equivalent of an Andrew Vaughn. But you're telling me you wouldn't consider doing something like that? And I would venture to guess there are going to be other guys that you could probably find as we get closer that'll be similar in terms of value, in terms of effectiveness, as what Aaron Civale has done throughout the course of his major league career.
Yeah, he's been pretty good.
He's been fine. Yeah. And so I think what I would phrase it as in terms of should you buy, should you sell, or how should you position it? I would refer to them, show, as conservative buyers. If the right thing comes up, you do it. Mm. But you don't be overly aggressive to the point where you are now compensating you're potentially compromising important future assets. So it's going to require that deliberate, and I think this front office, the one thing, not to give them credit, but the one thing they do very well is they are very deliberate. They tend to err more on the side of caution than taking chances all the time. And in this case, I actually think that's probably a favorable thing. That's probably beneficial for where they are and where they might end up being. But if you could do something, having just seen this trade transpire a couple of days ago with Aaron Civale, if you get a player of that caliber, to me then, I think that's the sort of price range the Jays would be shopping in as we get closer to the deadline. Because I think they'll stay in the mix. I really do. I don't think we're going to see this precipitous fall off. I don't know if you disagree with that,
no,
but
no,
I don't. Like, they're good enough.
I'm trying to think, like, the rental type players, I don't know if Walker Buehler will be end up being that kind of guy, but like, though, like that era zone of player pitcher, I think is what you're looking at ultimately, right? Like the Andrew, I mentioned this yesterday, but like Zach Littell, Andrew Heaney, Zach Eflin, maybe, like these are the guys you're looking at. Like, I don't believe they will end up probably because the cost is going to end up being prohibitive for a farm system that really only now feels like it's taking a very, very small baby steps forward with their upper echelon prospects, which means I'm not sure you want to deal those guys because I don't know, like maybe Namala is a solution 3 years from now, right? Maybe Yesavage is a part of the solution.
Yeah.
Maybe next year, who knows, right? But my point is, I'm not sure you want to sell those guys for like rentals, for example.
I totally agree. How about these two names?
Because
I think these are more interesting in terms of...
I love fake trades.
Trying to weigh the value of these players right now, and are they part of it? Are they not part of it?
Right.
Where do they fit in the grand scheme of things? One is Joey Loperfido, out of sight, out of mind. We haven't talked about him in forever.
Forever.
Joey Loperfido. Aurelvis Martinez is number two. Yeah. Oh, do I have another third one? No, I think those are the two main ones I have. Because I feel like, obviously, we saw a lot of Loperfido last year, right? Had an ugly start after he got traded from Houston. And then kind of had a nice stretch in the middle. And then end of the season kind of poorly again, tailed off. And now he's a triple A, and that's where he's been. Aurelvis Martinez. We know what happened last year. Didn't even really get to see him because of what transpired with his suspension. And now he's back in AAA again. Are those the players that they're far enough along in their minor league careers that they are the quote-unquote equivalent of an Andrew Vaughn,
right,
that you trade them for one of those rental options, be it a starter, a bullpen arm, however they want to expend that asset. Is that the type of guy? Maybe.
Maybe, honestly.
Maybe.
Maybe. I mean, Aurelvis Martinez, I think there's some question marks there after the suspension and what he is defensively. He's still pretty young. I mean, he's 23 years old, right? He is the third-ranked prospect in the Blue Jays organization, according to MLB Pipeline. Number one and two are Nomala and Yosavage in order. And then number three is Martinez. Number four is Ricky Tiedemann. Number five is Jake Bloss, right? Yeah. I mean, Bloss is injured right now. Tiedemann recovering from an injury, so it remains to be seen how much currency they still carry. The Bloss injury, too, I'm sure threw a huge wrench into like what the Blue Jays could have done this year with like Baden Francis, for example, right? I think if Bloss had not been injured and he had a rough start to the year, he kind of settled down after that and then had got the injury, right? Suffered the injury. So that I'm sure threw a huge wrench into the Blue Jays' plan. So I got to think they want to keep him at the very least, but it's going to be a really interesting summer, as a lot of the callers have discussed. Let's keep taking your calls. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to Eddie in Fort Erie. Eddie, welcome to Jays Talk. What's on your mind?
Not much. So, first of all, thanks for taking my call as always.
Yeah, no worries.
And hello to Agnelli as well. When I saw this series, I said to myself, was this off day going to do more harm than good for the Blue Jays? I understand that it was good because they needed to get the pitchers some rest because they've been used quite a bit, especially in the Minnesota series and, of course, in the St. Louis series. So I understood that. But on the other hand, maybe it was bad for the offense because scoring all those runs, you know, I wanted to see more of it, right? But when they went to Philadelphia, you know, it was a completely different story. You know what? They need this offense against Arizona because, you know what? You guys were talking about it a few minutes ago with one of the callers about Arizona. I mean, that team lives and dies by the offense. I mean, they can come back at will. I mean, think about – there's two games that stood out for me with their offense. The game against the Braves where they were down, like, I think it was like 10-2 or whatever it was, because I watched the game and I forgot the score. It was 10-2, and they came back to win it. And then last night against San Diego – they scored the five runs, you know, to win the game. So the pitching really needs to do good, especially against, you know, the pitchers that Arizona's throwing out there. And, you know, thank goodness that we're not going to see Gallen or Kelly. So that kind of helps. But you know what? The way that this – because – oh, yeah, another thing I wanted to say, there's actually two more things. When I was watching this game today and how aggressive the Phillies were, I had like thoughts of the Diamondbacks offense in my head because they were aggressive on Barrios the whole time, especially in the first two pitches of the inning. Now, I heard you guys talking about who would be a good fit for the Blue Jays. I really, really would like for them to get Andrew Heaney. I've been hearing about him. He's been having a great season. I heard him on MLB Network recently talking about, you know, how great of a season he's having in Pittsburgh, and he understands the situation that he's in if he gets traded. But I really would like for them to get Andrew Heaney at the deadline if it happens, because it won't have to cost them nothing. So I hope that happens.
Hey, appreciate the call, Eddie. Thanks for joining us. I do think, like, Heaney has actually pitched well enough over the last couple of starts to the point where I'm not sure I agree that he would cost them nothing, if only because he might actually, next to Merrill Kelly, be one of the more sought-after pitchers at the deadline, because everyone thinks that, right? Like,
yeah,
everyone
sure
thinks, hey, I mean, hey, can we get Heaney from the Pirates? Pirates aren't going anywhere. They don't want to pay guys, right? So I'm not saying he's not going to cost as much as, like, you know, Paul Skeens or someone would cost, right? Certainly. But he's definitely not a bad solution for your fourth spot if you're trying to solidify things like the Blue Jays have been. But, yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to the offense, too, from the Diamondbacks, not to get too far ahead, certainly looking ahead to Tuesday, but Corbin Carroll, Ketel Marte and Eugenio Suarez probably should all be all-stars this year, given how they've been hitting the absolute cover off the ball. So, yeah, I mean, you can't mess around with those guys. And, I mean, I don't think the Blue Jays were messing around, quote-unquote messing around, with Kyle Schwarber or Castellanos or Trey Turner. Certainly there's no Bryce Harper in this one, but apparently that's not a problem because Otto Kemp's been hitting like Bryce Harper, apparently. Well done by him after getting called up less than a week ago.
Bohm had a big day too.
Bohm had a really big day, and he had a tough year last year, right? He was on the trade market, and then and he's still their third baseman, so we'll see what that looks like for Dombrowski and company. But yeah, I mean, like, certainly I think the offense for the Diamondbacks is not one you can take lightly. I think too, and certainly Bassett and Gausman being two of the three pitchers you're going to throw out there against the Diamondbacks, I think is a good thing, certainly, because even when they run into trouble, they have shown the ability to bounce back. Certainly, even, you know, as recently as Friday, Gausman had that blip in the second inning and largely was pretty good for the rest of that game, right? But mm-hmm. I mean, I am a little worried about how not the bullpen at large will perform, because I still largely have a pretty huge degree of belief in Brendan Little, in Mason Fluharty, and Yariel Rodriguez. I think Jeff Hoffman to a lesser extent too, even if he's maybe on like the outer circle of trust, but still, yeah, like Hoffman is a part of that solution. But I'll be honest with you, man, like from the last couple of games, I'm not sure what the level of level of trust, the circle of trust looks like for old Eric Swanson and Chad Green, man, these days, man. I spent a lot of time talking about these two yesterday, so I'm not going to go on about them, but I am curious to get your take on both of them. I mean, Eric Swanson gives up the grand slam. He has now allowed 9 runs over 5 2/3 since returning off the IL. I understand he's working back from, you know, an abnormal start to his season, but that is, what's that, Nick? I'm being told that's bad. Yeah, that's bad. That's bad, Daniele.
Yeah, it's not great. Less than ideal, that's for sure. All right. You know, watching Eric Swanson pitch today's show, the one thing that really stood out, it was an at bat against Nick Castellanos, of all people. He always seems to find his way into things. Nevertheless, leverage count, Castellanos, I think it was a 2-1 pitch or a 3-0 pitch against Castellanos. And Swanson, he rears back, he throws a fastball at 92 miles an hour. And I hate to be that guy, but when you're a reliever that's trying to come into the game in moderate to high leverage situations, you're not going to blow people away with 93 on the radar gun, having that be a fastball to set up everything else that you do. If the hitter in the box, I've never hit in the big leagues, all right? But I'm sure Barker tells you the same. If the guy's pumping 93, and you know he needs to use that to set up everything else, you're not going to feel overwhelmed by 93. You're going to look for the 93, be ready to hit the 93, and it's not going to blow you away. And I think when you just look at it from that standpoint, there was that, actually, funny enough, I can't remember at what point this happened, but we were sitting here, and Pete Walker went and had the mound visit with the little consultation with Eric Swanson.
Right.
Looked pretty aggressive, like he was in his ear. And I think it was Chris on our broadcast that mentioned, he's probably telling him, trying to reassure him, hey, your stuff's good, your stuff's good. I take that as, if the guy's got to tell you probably your stuff is good, it means your stuff ain't good. It ain't working. And for me, when I watch it, you just see there's a lack of dynamism with his stuff. And I think it all starts with not having a fastball that really plays at an elite level for a reliever that is projected to be a moderate to high leverage option in your bullpen. I don't know. I don't know where we go here from here, show, with Eric Swanson. You know, I really don't, because you can only give so much latitude and leeway before there has to be something, some type of recourse. We're having this dialogue right now with Bowden Francis. To me, it's very similar in a lot of respects with this stuff. And that one's tough. Chad Green, I think there's more reason to have a tinge bit more of belief, I would say, but he's right there too, show. He is absolutely flirting with disaster too, because the home run ball in particular has been the bane of his season up until this point. His biggest enemy, giving up too many home runs. It's a struggle. It's frustrating. It's difficult to watch. And today in particular, Swanson, that was rough. That was really rough.
Yeah, it might be, I don't know if easy is the right word, but once, and again, Jimmy Garcia, of course, doesn't sound like he is that close to returning, given that we haven't had that many updates from John Schneider versus, you know, the updates we've been getting on Scherzer and Sandlin and the rest of these guys. But I, as I understand, I would imagine if you just had to make two very easy moves, Swanson and Green for Jimmy and Sandlin sounds pretty easy, right? And again, like, I said this yesterday, while I probably would opt based on right this second, maybe not on body of work, but based on right this second confidence levels, I probably would keep Braden Fisher over, let's say, a Swanson, for example, based on the results you're getting at the major league level right this second in these last couple of days. But the team, to your point from earlier, has largely often been pretty conservative, right? So it kind of feels like they would opt to keep one of those two guys in Swanson or Green, send Fisher down, and bring him back up at a later date if they really can't work through things with either of those two guys.
When it comes to
I necessarily agree with that.
No. When it comes to the bullpen, is it unfair to say the only two guys I do not want to see touch, moved, I don't want to see their routine or their role adjusted at all? One is Brandon Little. Mm-hmm. One is Yariel Rodriguez. Is that fair?
Well, when you say with Y-Rod in particular, I think it's fair. One, yes. But what do you think of when you think of role for Y-Rod? Because his role has been so different.
Hybrid.
Okay.
And by that I mean he's got the days where he needs to come out and give you two innings, and he's got the days where he comes out in the eighth inning and gives you the one inning and he throws 99.
Right.
Or if you, like we saw earlier this week, there is a scenario where basically, what I think in terms of how I envision his role, high leverage. That might mean eighth inning,
sure, okay, yeah,
middle of the order. Yep. If you need him, that's the pocket, right? That's sort of how I see it. Now, when Jimmy Garcia comes back and if he's healthy and he looks like the Jimmy Garcia that you've seen and that you expect him to be, well, then you recalibrate your expectations and your usage for Yariel Rodriguez. But I think I want him in that sort of role being best defined as you're the hybrid guy, right? Brandon Little, we know you're the lefty guy. You're the best lefty. So when we have the pocket of lefty batters that we need you to go and get out and we're facing the best lefties on the other team, you're that guy.
Right.
I think those are the two out of everybody in the bullpen that I know, at least now, I think it's very, as we know, volatile, but I feel like we have a pretty good idea of what you're getting. But apart from that, on any given day, show that includes Jeff Hoffman. You might get great Jeff Hoffman. You might get average Jeff Hoffman. You might get mediocre Jeff Hoffman. But we don't know consistently what we're getting from, I would argue, everybody else in that pen at this particular juncture of the season.
Yeah, Yariel Rodriguez and his role will be fascinating. I said this yesterday, but I do like the propensity to throw out a reliever just in the highest leverage moment, even if when he came in the other day, I think it was in the fifth inning with a runner on third. And that was a big moment of that ball game. And obviously it did not work out, but that's when they brought him in, right? Yep. They brought him in to put out that fire. And then he stayed in the ball game for an extra inning. He went an inning in a third, right? And I think that's totally fine. I think if you want to use Yariel Rodriguez like that, especially when Jimmy Garcia comes back, it gives you a lot of options, right? Because it means you can, if you want to, I mean, you could flip-flop that a little bit. You could have Jimmy put out the fires earlier in a game. You could have Yariel be the setup guy, and you could have Hoffman be the closer. You could, if Hoffman's struggling, you can, in theory, flip-flop the roles even more and have one of Jimmy or Y-Rod be the closer and have Hoffman be the setup guy, if that's what you believe, although it doesn't really, like, philosophically, it doesn't really feel like they're going to make that change. But generally speaking, I think if you have all three, and again, it's a big if because you need them to be healthy, in Jimmy's case, certainly, I think you do have, you have a lot of options, certainly, as well. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell, 590-590, name and location. Those are the ways to reach us on the phones and the text line. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll read some texts. We haven't read any of the texts today. So 590, 590, we'll get to that. Danielle on the other side. We'll also check out the Bet365 standings update. I believe the Rays game just ended, which means all of the games in the American League East for the day are over. So we'll check out that, and we'll continue taking your phone calls as well. So still lots to come on the other side. You're listening to Blue Jays Talk. That's Danielle. I'm Sho. We're back in a flash on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It had been so long since you guys lost a series. Is there a sense when you keep rattling off series wins, it's like, we're going to feel what it's like to lose again at some point? Like, how do you manage that?
I mean, it comes, right? It's part of it. You know what I mean? There's going to be highs and lows. There's going to be times where you run into a really good team and really good pitching. You know, it happens. It happens in baseball. So you don't want to get the feeling of losing a series, obviously. But, you know, I think the guys, they know well enough that this, you know, little stretch can happen. Like I said, it happens quickly, you know, and they'll be ready to go on Tuesday.
That's John Schneider speaking to the media following an 11-4 loss at the hands of the Philadelphia Phillies. The Blue Jays fall to 38-33 to wrap up a series sweep in Philly for the Phillies. They have a day off tomorrow, Monday, before getting back in action at the Rogers Center against the visiting Arizona Diamondbacks. You're, of course, listening to Blue Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Sho. That's Daniele. Before we get back to your text, 590-590, name and location, let's check out the Bet365 standings update. With Bet365, you can watch thousands of live games, build your own bet, and you can even make a bet while the game is still being played. 19+, play responsibly, Ontario only. So like I mentioned before the break, all the games in the division are now over. So we have our game, like I said, an 11-4 loss. The Red Sox, I believe this was a sweep for the Red Sox, Daniele. Yeah, it was a 2-0 Red Sox win over the Yankees. So the Red Sox, over the last like 10 days, they've looked like a completely different team than what we've seen from like the majority of the season, frankly. So we'll see if that holds up for Boston. But they do win 2-0. The Baltimore Orioles wrapped up a demolition of Yusei Kikuchi and the Angels, unfortunately for him. 11-2, the final score in favor of Baltimore. It's their 30th win of the year. And the Rays were leading the Mets 6-0 last I checked. Ooh, they won that game 9-0. So the Mets getting blanked in Queens, and they lose their 27th game of the year. The Rays improved in 39-32. So with all those scores being equal, here is what the American League East looks like right now. The Yankees are 42-28. The Rays are 39-32. The Blue Jays, as we mentioned, are 38-33. So they're a game back of the Rays, 4.5 back of the Yankees. The Red Sox are 37-36. They are just 2 games back of the Blue Jays now. And the Baltimore Orioles are 30-40. They're still a ways back. They're about, let's see, I think that is 8.5 games back of the Blue Jays and 12 games back of the division leading Yankees. So that's a quick check of the the Bet365 standings update. All right, let's get back to the text line, Daniele. 590-590.
Let's do it.
Name and location. Let's see. This one's from Tony in Kitchener. Let's also talk about Vladdy. He has been abysmal. He gets singles and the random doubles, but this team needs him to be better. There's a couple other ones on him, too. I mean, Dale in Nova Scotia says, I think Vlad Bowen Santander will answer the caller's question of should the Jays buy or sell. The deadline, the ball is literally in their court. And then Steven in Williams Lake in BC saying, has Vladdy earned any of that $500 million so far? When will he get hot? Yeah, I mean, like, that's a big part. That's a part of the conversation with Vladdy, right? It's, I don't think it's necessarily always fair. But I mean, when you are the face of the franchise and you're making lots of money and you've been publicly endorsed by everyone from the team ownership all the way down, I mean, I think when you're not producing like other guys who get paid a lot of money, I think you are going to get maybe sometimes an undeserved amount of criticism. But he has not been, as Barker likes to say, the aircraft carrier that I think you envision him to be so far.
Bingo. I mean, you're getting paid to, I'm sorry, not to just play a good first base or walk. Okay, that's great.
Walks are good.
I'm not trying to disparage or diminish, you know, getting on base and having a high OBP. That's great. Okay, I saw the graphic and I kind of joked with you before the game. He has more walks and strikeouts or whatever. It's like, and it's a significant margin. And I said, that's what the money's for right there. No, the truth of the matter though, Sho, is here's I was filling in on our morning show Friday with Ben Ennis, and we had this conversation as well, where Ben posed the question, if is it good? Are you okay with Vladdy having this approach where he's getting on, right? He's been solid, but not superhuman. Is that okay right now? And I said, no, because for me, I need you to not carry an offense. That's not fair to him. But you got to be one of the central figures in guiding the offense. And right now, and today's a prime example of it. This, I truly believe this, and it is applicable in my mind in various sports, maybe no more applicable than baseball and basketball, to be honest. Your role players can shine at home. Your superstars, they need to carry you when you go on the road and you play in difficult environments. And you're playing a game like today where you've lost back-to-back and your team's probably not feeling great. They need something positive to happen. It's supposed to be your best guys that get that process going. Now, in fairness to Vlad, he did have a big hit yesterday in the game on Saturday. Yep. Ties the game in the fifth, a double. huge hit, great piece of hitting, drives the ball to the right field gap. That's what you want to see. I also feel like it is fair to be a little bit more critical with him right now because his season has been fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's been solid, but it hasn't been like what you've seen from the other quote-unquote stars in baseball. Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani, Rafael Devers. Name your big-time hitter that is on an opposing team that is having a big year.
Devers is a good example, too, because Devers started the season to the point where I'm sure people in Boston, Boston media were like, will he ever hit a home run
ever again?
Yeah,
nine times in a row?
He had a miserable start to the season. It was horrible. And that was like mired in all the whole, I'm not going to play third base ever again. Like, screw you, Alex Cora, right? Like, that was a whole thing. And now, I think he hit his 15th home run of the season today, right? So, I think that's a good comparison.
And the Jays have one guy with double-digit homers. You know who that is, Sho? You want to take a guess?
Gosh.
One player on their roster, double-digit homers. This one actually might be a little...
Marsho.
No, good guess. It's not. Think similar, though, along the same lines. George Springer.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
George Springer is the only Blue Jay with double-digit homers. And that's a list that includes Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette. I mean, Dalton Varsho hasn't played in, 2 weeks? He's got the same number of homers as Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I set my benchmark in my barometer show for Vlad. And this is what I mean from the power department. Give me 30 homers. I don't need you to hit 40. Shohei might do it. Give me 30. That's my benchmark. And I think that's fair. I don't think I'm being unreasonable with that.
Someone texted in to say, check out Juan Soto's numbers compared to Vladdy's. Look, I mean, Juan Soto has also had a poor year. Let's face it. I mean, the guy's getting paid even more money than Vladdy. I can only imagine the New York media on like Mets talk is probably not particularly happy with him after they lose to the Rays and get blanked, 9-0 like we just talked about. So that is definitely not a lot better, certainly. Probably worse, frankly, given how much more money he's making. There's a text here, from Mike in Toronto. Sorry, it's time to DFA Swanson, Green, Francis, Walker, and the Little League manager. Pathetic. Wow, I don't know if I'd go that far. I mean, you can certainly option Francis if you had a better option. They don't, which is why it hasn't happened. I'm not sure I'd go quite so far. This one is an interesting one. What about Jeff in Cedar Grove just said Turnbull? ? We didn't get to him today. I will only get to this now just as we wrap up here, Daniele, because he was asked to mop things up. He threw 51 pitches in 2 1/3. In theory, he was like going to be asked to pitch on Wednesday following Lauer, like in some capacity. I guess you could still ask him to pitch like an inning or two if you really had to, but I'm curious to see what his role will look like after he threw so many pitches today.
Yeah, totally. I mean, also because he had only made a handful of appearances in the minors. It was a month buildup show. So is he ready to go out and throw, 3 days apart?
Sure.
I don't know. But he looked okay again today for the most part. Okay. And it's okay. Like, I mean, I think we're content with where he's at and his role on this team, which is fine.
That does it for us. Thanks for all the calls. Thanks for all the texts. And Daniele, this is always fun when you and I get to do this. So I hope we get to do it again soon.
Likewise. Thank you very much, Sho. It's great to be here.
That is the great Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. Blue Jays baseball brought to you by the local family-owned Kranos Control Centers in Windsor Center and Windsor North. Kranos proud to be Canadian-owned and operated since 1986. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local Kranos Control Center or visit crown.com. Crown. Canada's number one rust protection. For Eric Smith, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Daniele Franceschi, I'm Sho Ali. That does it for us. Happy Father's Day, everyone. Happy Father's Day to Daniele's dad, Rob, my dad, Naeem. And you know what? A special happy Father's Day to Chris LaRue, who is celebrating his first one today as a dad. But to all the dads out there, we appreciate what you do for us every day, certainly, but especially today. We're out of here. Blair and Barker, also dads, back on Tuesday for the Diamondbacks series. I'm back next weekend. Enjoy your off day, everyone. We'll talk to you later.